It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll find out why a top Wisconsin public health official is on the way to the Biden administration and how her record on vaccines in Wisconsin could help her case. First, on Monday, everybody 16 and up in Wisconsin became eligible to get a COVID-19 vaccine. That's nearly a month ahead of schedule. It comes as new cases have started to rise again in recent weeks, with new positive cases topping more than 1,000 for the first time in 2 months yesterday. Tony Evers is the Democratic governor of Wisconsin. I talked to him yesterday about vaccination efforts in the state and his plans for the billions of dollars in federal stimulus money coming to Wisconsin. Here's our conversation. Let's start with the ongoing vaccination effort. What do you see as the biggest challenges for Wisconsin at this stage?
At this stage, we have a good cadence going on. I feel very positive about the cadence we have now and the efforts we have going now. You know, clearly every state, and ours is no different, is concerned about those that are hesitant and those that are, you know, frankly, just against vaccination, period. But we really need to get to the hesitant people, and that's the major concern. And I have to also say, you know, vaccination goes along with being careful. We still have this virus out there and lots of different variants, and while we're in this race to get people vaccinated, we have to make sure that people continue to mask up and be safe and not get us to the point where we're, you know, fighting the virus in one way and unable to get people vaccinated because of people concerned about the virus and getting ill.
What are you doing at the state level to reach out to people who are vaccine hesitant for one reason or another?
Yeah, well, we at the state level, we provided resources, a fair amount of them, to kind of local or nonprofit organizations that already have connections with local people who would likely be hesitant, and so we're counting on them because they can. Those local validators are really, really important, Rob. You know, I can say something, or you know, the Milwaukee Bucks or the Brewers or the Packers and all that. But at the end of the day, the people that are hesitant, really, many of them are going to want to hear from somebody local that they know, their pastor, their some local community organizer, somebody from one of these nonprofits. A small example is we are, I think as we speak, we have a group calling 8,800 phone numbers for people that signed up for vaccines in the Milwaukee area, but have not yet made an appointment. So we're pulling out all the stops to make sure that we get as many people vaccinated as possible.
The hesitancy isn't the only problem necessarily. There are problems with healthcare access. That was one of the reasons that Black and Hispanic Wisconsinites were hit hard by this disease in the first place. What are you and the health department doing to make sure that, you know, people who want shots but maybe don't have that regular doctor, that health clinic that's calling them, have access to a timely appointment?
Yeah, and that was one of the examples I just gave. Those 8,800 people were in the zip codes in the Milwaukee area that we know there's lots of hesitancy, but these people actually took the first step to register. They just didn't take the second step to get an appointment. So we're reaching out there, but also the you know, we have these big open clinics, whether it's done by one of our healthcare partners or others. But at the end of the day, we will need to take vaccines, and we already are. Mobile units into different places. I know we've been putting up in a couple of our cities in the state vaccination centers and barbershops. And so we're going to do whatever we can, because you're right. There are people that have been disproportionately impacted by this disease. And these are the same folks that we want to make sure aren't hesitant, because it is really, really important. Now, going forward, we have to address the core issue here, Rob, and that is that those disproportionate outcome health outcomes can be remedied. And one of our budget items, and I know you're probably not wanting to talk about our budget, but has to do with expanding Medicaid coverage, and the money that we'll bring into the state will be well over $1 billion, and that would be set aside and used to do whatever we can, have programs that will make sure that that we start to overcome those disproportionate healthcare outcomes. And so it's an ongoing thing, but we are addressing it right now as it relates to making sure people get shots.
We're talking to Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers about the latest on the vaccination drive here in Wisconsin for COVID-19 and federal money coming to the state related to COVID-19. And Governor Evers, let's turn to that. Now got a pile of cash in effect coming from the federal government's relief package. You've talked some about what you want to do with the money. When are you planning to release full plans for how this federal relief money is going to be spent here in the state?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, we can't jump ahead too far before we know exactly what they're going to approve. The Treasury Department will provide directions for us and guidelines, more than guidelines, requirements for us. And so we don't want to get ahead of them, but we do know that we're going to be able to, first of all, set aside a fair amount of the money for, you know, continuing the vaccination issue in the state of Wisconsin and testing. We have to continue to test. So there's some basic public health issues that we have to continue to do that this money will help. In addition, we're going to do whatever we can to get that money out as quickly as possible for some of the similar things that we have in the past. Our small businesses, there's no question in my mind, and I don't think any Wisconsinite's mind, that those Main Street businesses that we have all across our state, whether it's Milwaukee or in the far north, they have struggled mightily because people have been unable to access services or access bars and restaurants. And we've provided some money in the past through the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. We'll be doing that in the future. It is exceedingly important to make sure that we can begin to make people whole again, and so that they can start hiring and getting back to the way of life that they're used to. In addition, I'll just give you another small example, although it's very huge. We have to make sure that this money that is coming from Washington, D.C. makes us a more resilient and better state, not just where we were. So we anticipate using a fair amount of that money for broadband expansion in the state of Wisconsin. This impacts and affordability issues, too. This impacts both urban and rural Wisconsin, significantly rural. I mean, that's where broadband is either highly inadequate or non-existent. And if we want our rural population to have access to telehealth and all the other types of things that we're trying to do in the healthcare world, but also we have to move forward, making sure that the businesses in northern Wisconsin have access to internet so that they can thrive. So the entrepreneurs that are trying to start up a company, if they have no internet, obviously they're not gonna go there. And so those are two areas that we plan to get the money out the door as soon as possible. But you know, first we have to make sure that people are held as harmless as we can make them because of this pandemic. I know that's the president's goal, and I know that's mine too.
You mentioned this is a budget year. You've put forward your budget. Republicans who control the state legislature working on their own incarnation of the budget. Some of them are saying, well, hold on. How can we know how to budget if we don't know how this federal money is being spent? We don't want to duplicate things. They're hoping to see your plans for this federal money before they end up with a final version of their budget. Do you see yourself working with them to meet that timeline?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it'll take them some time to kind of sort through what they want to do in the budget. And we will be releasing that information as soon as the Treasury Department in Washington, D.C. gets to us. But I don't want people to assume that this federal money is going to replace the money that we normally provide and work with on our biennial budget. That's not what it's for, and I know that's always going to be a push pull. But you know, it's clear that some people that are thinking of that. They will know where we're going to spend that money. But you know, I'll use broadband as an example. We will put lots of money from that federal money into broadband in our state. we need our state budget to also have money around that. It should not be replacing state money. This is a big issue, and it takes a lot of money to make sure that everybody gets broadband in the state of Wisconsin. So do I think that they need to know where we're spending the money? Absolutely, but it is not a replacement for our obligation as state legislators and as the governor of the state to do the right thing. Two-thirds funding for schools is not going to for school ongoing two-thirds money for our public schools is not something that this the Recovery Act is going to do to fix for us. That has to be done by the legislature. So what I'm saying, Rob, they can continue their deliberations. They don't have to grind them to a halt to wait for see where we're going to spend this money. What we can do is we'll get that information to them as soon as possible. But the budget and what this recovery money are for are two different things.
Republicans in the legislature have passed some legislation saying, in effect, we should have some control over where this federal money is going, this federal relief money. You vetoed some of that. Aside from the legalities of who actually should control the money, do you think it would work better if you brought in, say, joint finance as a consultative role with you to work together on how best to spend this money and mesh it with a future budget?
Well, we could do that, frankly, but you saw exactly what happens when the legislature, the Republicans in the legislature decide this is how this money should be spent. The Fiscal Bureau comes back and says, well, out of all that money, $600 million are being spent incorrectly. We don't have time to mess with this. I mean, you know, we're the executive branch of the government. We've done it in the past with the first and second money that came from the Trump administration. We can do this. They know where we're going to spend it. We're going to spend it in areas that we need to spend it in order to make our tourism industry strong and making sure that our small businesses are strong and that we have a good public health system. So, having the Joint Finance Committee kind of hold that money like they have in various other areas where they hold the money for a period of time to have, if one member of the Joint Finance Committee objects, we're going to hold up all the money that's going to small businesses in the state. It makes no sense. And so we are going to get that money out the door as soon as possible.
Governor Evers, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Take care. Have a good day.
That was Governor Tony Evers. I talked to him yesterday about his plans for Wisconsin's share of federal relief money and efforts to get people vaccinated in the state. Up next, we'll continue our conversation about vaccinations in Wisconsin. A Washington Post reporter joins the show to talk about how the state went from being one of the slowest states when it came to administering shots to one of the best. Stick around for that coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up on Food Friday, with more people returning to work in person, we'll need to change our plans for weekday meal preparation. We'll talk to the brains behind BudgetBites.com about getting back in the swing of meal prepping. First, according to data from the New York Times, Wisconsin currently ranks number 2 among all 50 states and U.S. territories in administering available vaccines. That comes after a slow start, and there's a debate about who deserves credit for the turnaround as a top former health official got picked for a big job in the Biden administration. Isaac Stanley Becker is a national political reporter for The Washington Post. He wrote a recent piece on the state's vaccine turnaround. Isaac, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, take us back to the early days of the vaccine. It seems like a long time ago. It wasn't that long ago, Isaac, but I think we all remember here, we got off to a slow start. Our numbers didn't look good compared to other states. Looking back now, what do you think was going on then?
Yeah, it was a grim time. And, you know, in some ways, Wisconsin reflected some of the initial challenges that we know that in December and January, there were problems across the board in quickly getting shots into arms, in addition to data problems where state health officials in many states said that they were, in fact, delivering and administering these shots, but it wasn't necessarily showing up in federal data. Now, that may have been part of the problem. But Wisconsin epitomized some of those problems. It was really lagging behind. Now, a couple months later, we've seen the state really turn things around and in some ways epitomize some of the recent successes of the vaccination campaign nationwide. It's quickly getting shots into arms. It has not seen some of the rural and urban disparities that have plagued other parts of the country. And it's activated a large number of providers that have been able to do local outreach and make sure that people, including hard-to-reach people, can get access to immunization.
When I look at the numbers, I see Wisconsin has been flirting with number one. I think right now we're technically number two when it comes to the percentage of vaccines that come to the state and then get used. And we're above the national average in first vaccines and total vaccinations. You mentioned that large number of vaccinators. What else do you look at that might account for Wisconsin looking pretty good again after that slow start?
You know, one of the other things that Wisconsin did early on that was blamed for some of the delays was it adhered pretty strictly to some of the prioritization categories developed initially by federal experts and then tweaked and instituted by people at the state and local level. So that was the effort to steer those shots initially to healthcare workers and people in nursing homes and then elderly people and people with high-risk conditions. Now, some states got somewhat frustrated with those categories and threw open the floodgates much earlier. Wisconsin adhered pretty rigidly to that, and it may have slowed things down initially, but what it did is it made sure that people knew when it was their turn, and also it successfully covered a larger share of those vulnerable groups before moving on to others.
Is this a case where people are now looking at the state and thinking we should have done it this way, or is it kind of too late for that? We are where we are with the decisions we've made, whatever state we're in.
Well, we do know that there is interest in Wisconsin nationwide. So the head of the state's immunization program was asked to participate in a virtual briefing in March with congressional staff. Members of Congress and their staff may be, in fact, looking to Wisconsin to understand useful models for later phases of this effort.
And also reflecting national interest, and you wrote about this, the former DHS Department of Health Services head, Andrea Palm, has been tapped for a role in the Biden administration. Now, there are a lot of people involved in this effort. What might have caught that national attention for her?
Well, she was previously a member of the Obama administration, so she has experience at both the federal and the state level. And that's right. So then President-elect Biden announced, I think it was just before the inauguration, if I have that timeline right, that he was going to make her Deputy Secretary of Health. So she had stepped away from this effort by the middle of January. But certainly during the planning phases, October, November, December, she was in a leadership position. Now, the individuals we spoke to said that members of her staff, immunization experts, may have been some of the individuals actually driving some of the discussions with people at the county level involved in the nitty-gritty, but also said, look, leadership matters, and the person in charge of the department certainly deserves some credit for the efforts and effect of some of that work that was done when she was still in the state.
Now, Andrea Palm is being appointed to this deputy secretary position, a Senate-confirmed position, as I understand it, and two Republican members of Congress here, Tom Tiffany and Scott Fitzgerald, have sent letters to Senate committees saying, hey, don't approve her. They're arguing against bringing her on board. Is it going to be smooth sailing, do you think, for her confirmation in the Senate?
Well, members of the House don't have a say.
Right.
Certainly, there will be Republican opposition. The Senate is divided evenly, so the vice president could break any tie. It will be interesting to see whether some of these more centrist members of the Senate, whether that's Susan Collins of Maine or Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who've been known to vote with Democrats on some of these nominees, in addition to some of their other Republican colleagues, vote to make this a bipartisan confirmation. We'll have to wait and see. That's probably going to happen sometime this month.
What are you watching as you look around in states now for progress on vaccinations? You mentioned the floodgates, pretty much all adults in Wisconsin eligible now. A lot of states are running toward that landmark. The Biden administration moving up the timeline there. What do you have your eye on?
I think I'm looking most closely at vaccine hesitancy and issues of access, and whether states, after vaccinating everyone who raised their hands immediately, are going to be able to provide a greater degree of coverage and get people through the door who may not have been planning to be vaccinated right away or had questions, but are convinced to do so after seeing friends, neighbors, family members be immunized and be safe and protected against this virus.
A big problem early on was just sheer supply of vaccine. A lot of people wanted it, and you know they're using them up as fast as they can make them. Just about. Do you see that part of the problem going away? Are we at a point now where supply is mostly meeting demand?
It is largely, and there's some variation here. So, I was just speaking earlier today to the state health secretary in Washington State, who said we are still finding that demand is outstripping supply. Now, in Mississippi, I was reading that there are thousands of unclaimed appointments. So there's going to be a lot of regional variation, state by state variation. And my sense is that in Wisconsin, because it has moved fairly deliberately, it is not yet at a point where there's going to be unclaimed doses. It's still able to pretty precisely match supply to demand. But pretty soon, I think we're going to see more and more places find that they have enough supply on their hands, and they're going to need to be figuring out ways to boost interest and confidence in the shots.
And just in our last minute, you wrote a week and a half or so ago about this kind of race against the clock with the new COVID variants, raising concerns about a surge. And are we going to get vaccinated enough to prevent that happening? It's been a couple of weeks since you wrote that. What are you watching for in that race?
Well, I've been looking pretty closely at Wisconsin's numbers, and infections are ticking up there as well, certainly not as severely as in Michigan. And state health officials are saying that if not for successful rates of vaccination, these numbers would look just much, much worse. So it is a race. We know that the vaccines are highly effective at many of these variants that are becoming dominant in the U.S. So the more people who get vaccinated, the less chance these variants will have of gaining a foothold.
Isaac, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Isaac Stanley Becker, national political reporter for The Washington Post, with us today to talk about how Wisconsin came to lead the nation on the percentage of vaccines used and what it means for a former Wisconsin public health official on the way to the Biden administration. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll do some advanced meal prepping with the founder of BudgetBites.com. So we'll do some logistics and save money along the way. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up Monday at 7 on The Morning Show, it's the State Capitol Report. Kate Archer-Kent checks in with state senators from each party about some of the biggest issues facing Wisconsin. That's Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, you might be headed back to in-person work soon, and for some that can mean starting to think again about packing lunches or getting dinner on the table after a long commute. For many home cooks, that's where meal prepping comes in, making stuff in advance. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of meal prepping? What are some of your favorite things to make ahead of time? Have you done it less, maybe, during the pandemic, or have you been doing it this whole time? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. It's Food Friday. Beth Monsell is the founder of BudgetBites.com and a fan of meal prepping herself. Beth, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, how does meal prepping help you throughout your average week?
Yeah, meal prepping, I found, is the best way to really make the most use of your time and money, because it's essentially just batch cooking. So you cut down on your daily cooking time, and because it's forcing you to plan, you can really make sure that you make the most use of your ingredients and you don't buy too much food or too little food.
So do you set aside a chunk of time on, I don't know, a Saturday or a Sunday and say, I'm going to come up with 2-3 meals that are going to be ready to rock during the week?
Yeah. So, well, these days, because I'm blogging full time, I'm pretty much cooking every day for the blog. But when I was still working full time, yes, I would take one of my 2 days off and I would have 2 to 3 recipes that I would cook on that day. And I would package them up into single portions so they're ready to just grab and go on the weekday. Because if you even just refrigerate the entire batch altogether, that can be a deterrent from you packing it to go to lunch, because it takes time to scoop it out every single day, you know, and then you have to wash the spoon and recover your dish. So making sure that you really pre-portion everything into single portions when you make it really helps the meal prepping strategy.
Now, there's some foods that famously get better as leftovers. I think lasagna is one that a lot of people point toward, and I agree. And then there's some foods that get less appetizing the longer they have sat there. How do you tackle that? How do you decide this is a one that's good to make in advance? This is one to either not do or to, you know, combine in a way at that end point?
Yeah, there's going to be a little bit of personal experimentation that everyone's going to have to do to find where their threshold is with certain foods, as far as do they mind the texture and flavor changes that happen as it refrigerates. Things that classically hold up really well for meal prepping are going to be soups, because you have pretty much no texture change and the flavors do get better over time because they have time to blend and it's really great. Casseroles, like you mentioned, rice dishes work really well. And I've even had really good luck with some salads. I have a whole series of what I call refrigerator salads on my website. And these are salads that hold up well to refrigeration. So you can make them on the weekend and then just eat them for the next few days. They're excellent.
Yeah. So salad is exactly kind of what I was thinking of, foods that don't hold up well. So how does that work? Do you not dress them until you actually eat them, so they're not sitting there getting soggy?
Yeah, sometimes. It depends on the ingredients of the salad. So most of my refrigerator salads are going to use really hearty ingredients. So I stay away from the delicate lettuce, you know, and I'll use something like kale, which can actually stand up to being dressed ahead of time. If you are going to use a more delicate green or other delicate vegetables, you can wait to dress it until just before you serve it. And sometimes they hold up way better that way. But then I also like to incorporate other ingredients in there, like beans and sturdier vegetables like maybe bell pepper, carrots, cabbage, things like that, that are not going to get wilty very fast. So you can go like a full 4 days and still have a great salad at the other side.
Well, I should say, you gave us some recipes that are up at WPR.org/Food Friday. One of them is autumn kale and sweet potato salad. Now it's spring, but I can confirm the existence of both kale and sweet potatoes at grocery stores right now. Tell us about this salad. That sounds like one that is going to hold up really well.
Yeah. So again, like kale is really sturdy. So whether you decide to dress ahead of time or decide to keep the dressing separate, it's not going to get all slimy and gross. It's going to hold up. And sometimes people even like kale a little bit better after it has been marinating in a dressing, because it can soften it. So if you're the type that finds kale to be a little bit too rough for you, you might want to dress that one ahead of time. The salad also has sweet potatoes, which again, hold up great. These sweet potatoes are roasted ahead of time with a little bit of seasoning. So they're really great. And we've got some seeds on there. Leaves, pepitas, and that's going to give the salad some crunch. And then it's a really delicious homemade dressing that you can drizzle over top.
Talking to Beth Monsell, founder of BudgetBites.com. It's Food Friday, and we're talking about prepping meals in advance. You do the work ahead, and then when you need something fast, maybe at the end of the workday or to pack in your take-to-work lunch, you got it ready. Call in at 800-642-1234 and tell us about your meal prepping. Let's go to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm such a Renaissance man. I love sharing my ideas. I think one of my heroes is the cabbage. I make my coleslaw at least a day in advance. I add a crushed garlic to it. I'm the only one I know that does that. And over a day or two, it really, those flavors come together. It's a delicious coleslaw. And I love kimchi, which is, of course, prepared ahead of time. But the cabbage, I think, as a vegetable, can stand up to some real sauerkraut is made ahead of a time. I mean, that's a really wonderful vegetable.
Now, Jeff, I'm going nuts for kimchi lately. I buy it at the store. Are you making your own kimchi?
Well, I buy my favorite brand, and then I'll take it out of the jar, and then I'll set it aside with some garlic, because I like garlic. And that's what I mean by preparing it. You can take something. My grandma used to teach me canning foods when I was a kid, preserving fruits and vegetables. And I would often take the things out of the jar and set it aside and put it with something else to create something new. And gotcha. It's a way to experiment with food.
Jeff, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. And Beth, I think like kale, cabbage is a green that, you know, is going to hold up pretty well for at least a few days in a coleslaw or a kimchi plus garlic or what have you.
Yeah, I'm so glad he brought up cabbage. It's one of my favorite ingredients because not only is it incredibly inexpensive, like you said, it holds up great either after you've already gotten it in a recipe or if you buy it, it doesn't go wilted in your refrigerator, you know, until you have time to use it. And it's also a really great way to bulk up recipes without adding a lot of carbs because I know a lot of people think about cooking on a budget as having to use a lot of rice and pasta, but cabbage is one of my go-to ingredients for really making a recipe a lot more filling and having a lot more volume without adding a lot of carbs and without making it really expensive. So cabbage is just so versatile. I love it.
Thanks for that call, Jeff, at 800-642-1234. Beth, let's check out another recipe you sent along to us. We've got it at wpr.org/foodfriday. Now, this is just kind of an easy to go take to lunch thing, a hummus lunchbox. Your version has a store-bought hummus. If we're ambitious, we could make our own. But tell us about our hummus lunch combo.
Yeah. So this past fall, I came up with a short series of no reheat lunch boxes because a lot of people who were going back to work were still not able to use their break rooms and their microwaves. So I started coming up with just some combos of foods that you could throw together in a bowl or a lunchbox and not have to reheat them later. So this hummus lunchbox has hummus as like your main protein. You've got some pita triangles, some grape tomatoes, sliced cucumber, and some olives. And there are so many other things you can add in here. You could add some feta cheese. You could do some celery or carrot sticks, bell peppers. You could even add some pre-grilled chicken. So there are a lot of different directions you can go with a cold lunchbox like this.
Well, I'm looking into my soul as I think about this, Beth, because I look at something like that and think, oh, is that really even cooking? It's just putting stuff together. But then on the other hand, I think, I love to eat that way. That's exactly one of my favorite ways to eat some snacky stuff with a dip.
Yeah.
And do you try to think of those things along those lines, too, where it's, you know, you're cutting up and assembling and it doesn't have to be this long labor-intensive process?
Exactly. So if you're doing four or five at once, it just takes way less time and energy than having to do it once every single day because you're not taking those ingredients in and out of the fridge, rewrapping everything, cleaning the cutting board and the knife every time. So batch cooking is definitely the way to go if you want to save time and energy and money.
We're talking to Beth Monsell of BudgetBites.com about meal prepping. And you can join us on Food Friday at 800-642-1234. Is this something you do in normal times? Have you been doing it or even started doing it during the pandemic? Or maybe you take that chunk of time on the weekend, whatever your weekend is. I know we don't all work Monday to Friday. And make those things in advance so they're ready to go when you get done with work or to take to work or to send to school. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We've got some recipes that Beth shared with us at wpr.org/foodfriday. We'll pick up this Food Friday conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our Food Friday talk on meal prepping with Beth Monsell of BudgetBites.com. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do this? Do you prep meals maybe on the weekend to be ready for weekday dinners or workday lunches? Do you have a favorite recipe or style of cooking that you do to make that happen? Call in at 800-642-1234, or maybe a question for our guest, 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Joan is with us on the way through Plymouth. Joan, hi.
Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to talk about my favorite go-to, because we eat a lot of salads, and so that's a lot of chopping of vegetables and stuff. So what I do is I take my black bean salsa and I combine it with my cowboy caviar. So you've got like black beans, black-eyed peas, garbanzo beans, all the different colors of the peppers, a red onion, cilantro, grape tomatoes. So everything gets chopped up, combined. And then the only dressing on it, and I do that right away, is I squeeze about three or four limes on it. And it tastes like candy, really. And then what I do is during the week, if I want to have a salad, I put my greens down and then I put a cup of that on top of it or more. And then I put like my chicken, or my pork chop or my steak or my salmon, whatever we're having on top of that. and sometimes I just eat it out of the bowl because it's so good.
That's fantastic, Joan. I love it. So in this case, we've got Beth. You know, she's not making the full meal, but she's got this pre-mixed ingredient. Then it's versatile to go with whatever salad and protein combo she's making.
Yeah, I think she highlighted a really important point is that when you meal prep, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a full-blown meal, meat and two sides. You know, you don't have to prep that way. You can just prep portions of meals ahead of time and then use that in different ways. Like she was saying, you know, you could serve that cowboy caviar as a side dish with dinner. You can put it over a bed of greens for a salad. You could use it as a topper for your tacos or your burrito bowls, or you can just scoop it up with some chips and eat it as a snack. So having that stuff prepped ahead of time just really makes life so much easier and is going to make it way less tempting to go eat out and spend money on takeout.
And hey, let's stay on the bean theme. And you mentioned the burrito bowls. We've got your poor man's burrito bowls up at WPR.org/Food Friday. And the picture looks like something you might get at, I don't know, a certain chain of restaurants. Tell us about these burrito bowls.
Yeah, so this is actually inspired by that chain of restaurants and a dish that we see growing up. But burrito bowls have become so popular lately. And, you know, there's a huge fast food chain that gets really fancy with their burrito bowls and you could put 10, 12 toppings on them. But if you just scale it back and make it really simple, just, you know, and have your rice, your beans, your salsa and cheese, and it is so good just like that. Of course, you can add more to it if you want, but I think the secret here is to keep it simple, to keep your costs down, find that healthy balance for you between satisfaction and simplicity.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mary is with us in Pewaukee. Mary, hi.
Well, hi. Thanks for the show. And what I do is, if I can mention the name, I love the Meijer deli or rotisserie chicken. And then you can, let's say that when you first bring it home, first of all, it's warm. And you can have that with, you know, a sweet potato and maybe some corn on the side. So simple to make. And you could do it ahead of time, but it's just so quick to just do at the spur of the moment. And I do my potatoes, unless I have a lot of time and something else in the oven, right in the microwave with waxed paper. And you poke some holes in it after you wash it, and it's so simple. So then with that same chicken, the next day or two, you can make chicken soup or something else. Like I make chicken salad, and if you're low on the carbs or, you know, not eating a lot of carbs, you can have it with a tortilla instead of bread or croissant. Mm-hmm. And a simple chicken salad, look up a recipe, but I put a little celery and an onion or scallions, a little chives, and, you know, your basic a little mayo and mustard in there, and that makes a wonderful meal or a lunch.
Mary, thanks so much. I love it. Sounds great. And that idea, Beth, and this could be a rotisserie chicken you bring home from the store or a chicken you bake in the oven yourself, that advanced planning for this is making me one meal, but I know the leftovers are going to make me the soup or salad or what have you.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, too, to use the techniques that fit your lifestyle. Like, she took a shortcut by getting the rotisserie chicken instead of cooking it yourself, and you can totally do that. The key here is to make it fit your lifestyle. So you don't have to make everything from scratch. You don't have to meal prep every single meal of the week. You can just meal prep one meal. You can, you know, take a shortcut with partially store-bought ingredients, you know, things like that. So play around with it. Don't be intimidated and think you have to be like the Instagram people who are meal prepping every single day of the week. You know, make it fit your lifestyle. And even if you just do one meal a day, it's really going to make a big difference on your budget.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We got an email from, our own Jason Butler from WPR. He says, I always keep a handful of single portion frozen beans and rice in the freezer, usually something like Indian red lentils and rice or 15 bean Cajun soup and rice or Moroccan style spicy brown lentils and rice. The bonus add-ons really make those pop, like putting mango pickle in the dal or chutney with the brown lentils. So that's great. A single serving, in this case, beans and rice that you just pop in the microwave, Beth.
Yeah, and I love the fact that he brought up freezing because meal prepping is not just refrigerated goods. So a lot of times I will freeze my meal prepped portioned meals. And that way I can have greater variety throughout the week of what I'm eating. It's not like I meal prep one thing and then eat that for 4 days straight. I can switch it up by grabbing something out of the freezer that I may have cooked a week ago or 2 weeks ago. So yeah, having those basics in the freezer is a really great way to go.
Now, in my younger days, in my 20s, when I lived alone, I would make a big thing of rice and beans and eat it 4 days straight, sometimes twice in a day. I don't know. I don't think I have that. I don't think I could do that anymore. How do you make sure you are getting that kind of variety in your meal planning?
Yeah, so I think we've brought up a couple of good strategies already. So freezing, so you can have that variety to choose from. And then just meal prepping the bases for the meal, like the cowboy caviar, and then making sure you use it in different ways throughout the week. So that's going to really help you get variety.
It is Food Friday. We're talking about meal prepping with Beth Monsell, founder of BudgetBites.com. Let's go back to your calls now. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hello.
Hello. I make a wonderful dish, which is so useful and so, well, let me tell you about it. It's a mixture of milk and eggs and dried spinach and grated cheese all mixed up in a mixing bowl. So this is a liquid that really forms more or less into a souffle when you bake it. It's baked in a 9x13 pan, and it rises slightly while you bake it, and then it sinks down. When this is fully baked, I cut it into squares and put each square in a double plastic sandwich bag and freeze them. So when you want this, you can take out a bag, let it thaw on the kitchen counter, and eat it at room temperature. Or you could pop it into a microwave and heat it for less than a minute, and you've got a nice hot souffle. Or you can take it out of the freezer and pop it into your briefcase and take it with you to work and eat it any time during the day that you want to. It is wonderfully nourishing with the eggs and the milk and the spinach. It tastes delicious. It is a superb make-ahead meal that is so useful. And I keep making this over and over, and I never get tired of it.
That sounds fantastic, Nancy. Thank you so much. A souffle. And Beth, that sounds like it's in a quiche or frittata kind of territory, which I got to say, I love. I don't know why I don't make them more often. I love having those around as leftovers or popping, making an extra one to put in the freezer and eat it a month later.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to meal prep breakfast. People often forget about the option to meal prep breakfast, and people are so busy in the morning. It's great to have that breakfast already ready to go, throw in the microwave, like she said. So with the baked eggs like that, there are so many different directions you can go, which makes it so much fun. You can toss in just about any leftover vegetable or cheese or meat that you have in the refrigerator and then use up your leftovers that way by making it into something new with this meal prep breakfast. And you can bake it in a 9x13 dish, like she said, and cut it into square portions. You can bake it in a muffin tin and have little round pucks. You know, you could bake it in a pie dish and slice it kind of like into triangles. And you can even use those baked egg squares and make a breakfast sandwich out of it with like an English muffin and a slice of cheese. So there are so many different ways you can do that. And I think it makes, like she said, a really healthful and nourishing meal prep breakfast.
Thanks for that call. And Beth, in just our last few moments, it's full on spring now. Summer's coming. Do you have favorite warm weather kinds of things to meal prep?
Oh, yeah. I'm staying on the subject of breakfast. I love doing a meal prep cold oats or muesli for breakfast. So you basically just put your oats in a jar or a container with some nuts and maybe a little bit of brown sugar and cinnamon. Pour some milk over top and let that soak overnight, or you can use yogurt and the oats get soft so you don't have to even heat them up. And in the morning, they're ready to go.
Sounds fantastic. Beth, thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
That was Beth Monsell, founder of BudgetBites.com. She joined us on this week's edition of Food Friday to talk about meal prepping strategies and to share some of her favorite recipes to make ahead of time. You could find four of those recipes. Only got to three of them. We've got an autumn kale and sweet potato salad, hummus lunchbox, poor man's burrito bowls, plus a ground turkey stir fry. Find them all at WPR.org/Food Friday. Coming up Monday on Central Time, tourism has taken a hit during the pandemic in Wisconsin and around the world. What could a comeback look like? A tourism expert joins the show, and you can tell us where you want to go. Some police officials have testified against the former police officer charged in the death of George Floyd. Our guest looks at the significance of that testimony and the idea of a blue wall of silence. And vaccine numbers keep climbing in Wisconsin and around the country, but there's been some misinformation along the way. We'll tackle some of the misleading stories you might see when you check out your social media feed. That and more, all coming up Monday here on Central Time. Yesterday, we talked about some great TV shows to watch to take away stress. TV writer Jen Chaney from Vulture joined us with lots of recommendations, including Blown Away, a glass-blowing show, and Ted Lasso, a comedy about an American football coach who goes to manage a soccer team in England. You called in with your favorites, and you shared some on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Nicole writes, "When I'm stressed and need a mental break, I turn to comedy." Nicole, I'm right there with you. Mandy tells us Great British Bake Off is amazing. It's a wonderful show full of kindness. Although it's a competition, the contestants support and help one another, which is so refreshing and lovely to see. Plus, Mandy says, "I've learned a lot and have improved my own baking skills." Jill says, "I binge-watched The Repair Shop on Netflix. It is set at a living museum in England, and people bring in antiques of all sorts to get fixed. Very calming, and you get to watch these artisans skillfully fix these items. It includes pottery, paintings, toys of all sorts, clocks, sleds, furniture, and a lot of other stuff. Two seasons done for me." And Jill says, "I watched in April as I was making cloth masks." Sounds interesting. I'm going to tell my family about that one. And Lisa says, "Doc Martin. It's funny, clever, sweet, and the location is magical." You can keep sharing your de-stress TV recommendations over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.